Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to The Art Detective with me, Dr. Yanina Ramirez. I'm an Oxford lecturer, a broadcaster and writer, and I'm also your chief investigator of images. I'm having a lovely time today with my guest, Ricky Martin, who I know better as Art Ninja.
True.
You are CBBC's Art Ninja.
Yeah, that's what I do. That's my day job, I guess. Actually, yeah. I've got more than one day job. I also do a lot of different creative stuff, creative director and a bit of an artist myself.
Yeah, and you've worked for Aardman as
an animator. A bit, yeah. I'm mainly director on there, but I do animation as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're a man of many talents.
Jack of all trades, master of none.
I know you from Art Ninja because my kids watch it and I've ended up watching it. But I love it because you are the new Tony Hart, aren't you? You're this generation's Tony Hart.
That's a really high standard to be put against. And people usually just tell me that I'm not as good as Neil Buchanan. But Tony Hart, that's great.
But you're brilliant because, it's making, doing, creating art. But you've also studied art, haven't you?
Indeed, yeah. I did it when I was in my GCSEs, for my A-levels and for Art Foundation. And then I sort of moved into doing more animation and media after that. But it's always remained a passion.
And you still paint and draw and things.
Yeah, mess around.
I can't believe you do that on top of the day job. Just a little bit more painting. I haven't done enough today.
Well, there's 24 hours in a day, so you can fill it somehow, can't you?
And skateboarding, of course.
Of course, yeah.
We are talking about a very appropriate artwork today. When I asked you what you wanted to do, tell me what you said.
What, word for word? I said I really wanted to look into Enrico Bush because it's a little bit crazy and mental, a little bit different. Everyone expects me to pick more child-friendly stuff, but he sometimes likes to draw willies on things. But in the stuff that we're looking at today, it's very, I don't know, it's hard to, there's lots of different ways you could describe it. It's kind of, it's aggressive, but it's also almost feels like an itch that needs to be scratched, all of his artwork.
And the work we're looking at is Fire. It's in the Tate, and we're looking at it on the laptop in a cafe, having a nice sit down. And but in this context, you don't really get a sense of the scale of it, do you? Because it's a huge thing. It's what is it, about 1.20 meters?
Yeah, it's massive.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny actually, because I went on. Shall I tell you how I came across him? Because it's not something that I sort of went out of my way to find. I was on a trip when I was doing Art Foundation. We were in Milan, and we'd all bought tickets to go and see The Last Supper, and everyone was really excited going to see The Last Supper, blah, blah, blah. And I was not that bothered. Like, I mean,
you Philistine.
Well, no, because I think it's the thing about quite a lot of religious art. You already know the story behind it and what went into it, and it also seems so ostentatious in the way that it's actually put together. And so I just sacked it off and went around my friend Tom, and we thought we'd better see a gallery somewhere. Otherwise, we're idiots coming here on an art course and not seeing anything. And we walked into this gallery. It was a complete solo show of his work. I was just blown away.
Wow.
It was just completely mental. Like, all of his stuff is just, it's huge. There's so many mixed medias in it. Mm-hmm. They seem sort of frustrated and excited. Every single one screams at you. It was really overwhelming. I was like, I'm so glad I didn't go and see The Last Supper.
Yeah.
I probably should have, but if I hadn't, I would have never discovered him.
Yeah, he's not the most well-known of artists, so you should probably put him in a bit of context. He's Italian, so seeing him in Milan, that's his hometown, isn't it?
This is before he died as well.
Oh.
because he died, I don't know, about 10 years ago?
Yeah. 10, born 1944. And in terms of his work, I mean, he's part of a number of movements. I think that's one of the other issues, is he sort of slips between different isms and different types of modern art. But the one we're looking at today, Fire Fire, it's in the Tate. I wasn't in the least bit surprised that you picked this, frankly.
Why not? Ricky,
because, for a start, the eyes are made of Meccano.
Yeah.
Okay. Given your connection with kids' TV. This totally did not surprise me.
But he is like, it seemed like he just walked around the streets picking stuff off the floor and thought, that'll work well in my paintings.
But he did though, didn't he? And that was part of his technique. Collage really comes into his work, doesn't it? I mean, this one is, it's paint. It's got this weird bit of Meccano to do the eyes. But I think what you say is, you know, that this is like you're being screamed at.
Yeah.
And the context, given the title, I guess, we could say, Fire, fire, this is a dramatic moment that's being captured.
Well, he was kind of obsessed with nuclear war for a while, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Well, who wasn't? I mean, if going through the Cold War back then, it probably thought everything was going to blow up every second. But it's the way I thought, when I first saw it, it felt like, you know, if you doodle on a page, I'm about to sort of maybe delve slightly too deeply into my psyche. you sort of do a doodle on the page and it doesn't quite feel right. So you put like a scratch in the corner, a little scratch somewhere else to try and find that area that felt like it was meant to be, and he ends up creating these really, I feel like they're like live emotions, like these things just screaming out doing a particular thing, and I think they all seem to are reminiscent of this, I feel like a frustration or a fear that suddenly exploded, and this one just when I first saw it, it made me laugh. I just thought it's so hilarious. Just for the first thing, it's just, this is making me laugh. And then I started reading about it and looking into it, and I was like, blimey, actually there's quite a lot going on here. And yeah, I'm sure you can tell me. I mean, you're the art detective, right?
Art Ninja versus art detective today. We're going to be batting it back and forth. I mean, I think that the significance of this is that, again, it looks so childlike, doesn't it? And when we think about Barge and the influences at the time, he was a really interesting character. He was really involved in loved of psychoanalysis and the impact of, you know, the subconscious. And he was part of a movement that wanted to get back to sort of childlike qualities in art. I mean, he did all sorts of different things, didn't he? And he was a very capable and accomplished artist. I think some people might look at this and go, ooh, bad art. But it's not that he's doing these things badly. He's doing them in this style because he's he's emulating the drawings and sketches of kids, trying to get back to this childlike innocence in a funny sort of way. When you saw the exhibition, did you see sort of stylistic differences, or was there?
Yeah, well, the media that he was using changes throughout. Like, it was very, it went from very very heavy collage work to just some main sort of paintings. Then there was mirrors in them. Then there was medals using quite a lot.
That's the general series, isn't it? That's the one he's really famous for. And yeah, found pieces. So he'll, like you say, pick things up and use them. But this idea that you're putting medals and metal and things onto a canvas. But yeah, I think it's interesting that he's used Meccano here as well, because that is a childish
it is
element.
Entirely childish, yeah.
But it works so well, doesn't it? The eyes
they jump
up
out
looking,
entirely.
Yeah, but they look odd. They look unsettling. Slightly surreal.
Yeah, to say the least. Let me zoom in on that a little bit. Just want to get a bit clearer into him.
And I think that the, look, because there's Meccano around. It's actually doing the outlines in Meccano as well. And then that's one of the little rubber wheels, isn't it? Is that a rubber wheel around the eye?
Yeah, I think so.
Isn't it crazy? The closer you get in on it, actually, the more you see, the more detail you can see. I love how the colour of the Meccano has changed. He's used different bits. And it goes all the way down here. So, I mean, in terms of using other objects, that's part of this whole approach as well, isn't it? It's almost like the chaos of nuclear war, it's exploding onto the canvas. Mm-hmm. But I think his fascination with nuclear war, it comes through in other images as well. This one, I think what's startling about it is the mouth, that bold use of white. around the mouse. But look at the background as well.
Is it a curtain?
I think he's put it onto material, hasn't he? It just seems so incongruous. Mm. And so really, there's not a... good, thank you. There's no narrative here, is there? I think that might be one of the things that, for Art Detective listeners, you know, this is not standard traditional art.
No.
This is not your Last Supper. But why does it affect you then, do you think? Why do you think it works for you?
Well, I guess it's because when I first saw it, I didn't know what I was going into. Mm. And I didn't realise I was going to like it or want to see it or be fascinated by it in any way. It's just because they're such like little characters that are almost like built up frustration, like ready to explode. And it was just so refreshing after walking around and thinking to see such old pieces of work, to then see something that I thought at the time was quite contemporary, but I guess from the other people that he was working with, it was all part of the greater movement that I then looked into as well.
Yeah.
But I mean, as you know, I'm an animator as well, and I felt like these things, my work has gone from starting with sketches and comic books and then moving, of being frustrated like it wanted to move. And I feel like his are doing it anyway. It's like this was like a still of a character in turmoil and screaming out. And that kind of inspired me in my animation. I actually based quite a few characters in my foundation year on Barge's work.
And you animated them?
And I animated them. That was like people drawn onto these bits of curtains and eyes and Makana and things in them that were animated. So much fun.
That's so cool. I think you're right. You know, this is poised on that edge of moving images that using different mediums. But I think there is so much movement. There's so much drama. I think the childlike simplicity is quite important, isn't it? Because Barge was associated with lots of different movements, so with Dada and surrealism, but also with Cobra.
Yeah, we were saying this, like if he'd joined earlier, it would have been called something different.
Yeah, he joined late on. So the founding members were from these three different cities, weren't they? So Copenhagen, Brussels and Amsterdam. We made ourselves remember that, didn't we,
yeah,
earlier? And you get the CO from Copenhagen, BR from Brussels and the A from Amsterdam. But their whole MO really was about going back to childishness. Mm. Karen Apple, I mean, I've just recently done a programme with Alistair Souk where we went to Amsterdam and we saw the huge Apple mural that's there. And I'm not convinced. I like what Apple's doing. Very, very similar artist. Mm-hmm. Bold colour, mixed medium, very basic outlines. I'm on the fence with Apple. I like Barge more in a funny way. How about you? Do you know the comparisons?
Yeah, I do. I feel like he cares less, but also if you look into it, there is a meticulousness in there. So obviously he does, but it just feels more instinctual, I think.
Yeah, more free. Mm. And
but that's
and
the
applied.
Childlike part of it as well, isn't it? I guess because kids just go for it.
But it's part of this idea of the spirit, the soul, the psychoanalysis. He's really fascinating. He worked closely with Umberto Eco as well, who is one of my absolute heroes, sort of father of semiotics in lots of ways. And this idea of signifiers, reducing things down to signs and symbols, I can see that he's really influenced by that. I think there is actually quite a lot of messaging going on in these. I don't so much in the Apple because it just seems to be an expression of colour, an explosion. Whereas I think
more
he's
of a statement.
Yeah, I think he's actually sending through messages in these. And the name as well, Fire, Fire. I mean,
well, it's in Italian. It was like Fiera,
wasn't it?
But that's obviously what you call it, yeah.
Yeah. And I think that the fact he titles all his works with these sort of ambiguous titles, doesn't he? Mm. But yeah, I was looking at some of the other things he's done. They're all quite funny as well.
That's it, because I told you that's the reason I actually liked him, because I just thought they were so hilarious.
It's
just
funny.
And it's that expression on them. You're just like, oh my God, look at this one. Come and look at this one. Like, next one around the corner, massive again.
And there's another one that he did in the Tate that just looks like a massive, it's a print.
Yeah.
And it's like a huge, I don't know, moustache? Or a grass dress with big boggly green eyes and a sort of a wedge shape for a nose and a bit of a moustache. I find that really funny.
Mm.
And so I think there's a certain amount of comedy in it.
Because I think they translate really, I personally think they translate really well into being animated characters because they're already funny. And you can see how this thing would move. You can see how that would move. and that's just sort of, it just gets you into the stuff. I just love that part of it.
So what did you do with them when you animated them? What were they up to?
Well, I did an animation for my foundation year, which... It was inspired by loads and loads of different animations at the time. There was some Dragon Ball Z in there because, you know, anime was around at that time. But it was so many different kinds of media, but inside of a machine that was doing something, like a human that was doing something, inside the eye was one of Barge's characters driving the person, like being in charge, and then like the little control room where they are like got on fire and it was panicking, like kept stopping these different expressions.
Well, that's perfect, given the sort of the idea of going into the mind.
I would have loved to have met him, but I think I don't know what, I'm trying to imagine what the person behind these things would have been like. Because would he have been kind of cool or not cared or felt like you didn't get what he was trying to do? Or would he be really frustrated that we were laughing at works?
Well, I think the fact that he was a member of Dada, got into Dada, I think that idea of nonsense actually is so important in that movement. It's supposed to be provocatively funny, isn't it? I think he sits beautifully within all of those brackets with Cobra, with Dada, with Surrealist. But also, I just think that he was quite a nonconformist. I mean, when you look at his life, he was an anarchist.
Yeah.
He was a rebel. He refused to be subscribed to the army, didn't he? I think he was probably quite a rebellious character.
Why isn't he more well known?
It's tricky, isn't it? I think...
Because you weren't going to forget this picture, are you?
Once you've seen Firefire, I don't think you can forget it. It gets etched in the retina. He really isn't very well known. I think it's probably because a lot of his paintings are obviously still in Italy, a lot of his images. But also he did prints as well, didn't he? Bitten on small scale. So the Tate's only got two. The Tate has got this one, and the Tate has got this print, the one with the hula skirt. but on the whole, I think he's not well known at all. I think the other big names from those movements are better known.
Yeah.
But I think that now that we've had a chance to look at it, I think it will have an impact on the viewer. There's a wonderful use of colour in it, isn't there? Because
I'm assuming that's the flames burning up.
It's actually quite horrible, isn't it? Because I think what you've got is the licking orange paint as the flame, and then these sort of bursts of red as well. Oh, it's always like he's bleeding.
What do you think he's saying, this character?
Fire, fire.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's more sort of one syllable swear word. Yeah.
He does look like he's going to burst out. Actually, I think what's really clever as well is the way he's put that framing area behind the figure. That sort of puts him into relief.
It does. It pulls it out from the very, very textured background, doesn't it?
It does. And again, I think that this, the repetition of the red in the eyes and coming through here, it's slightly upsetting and makes you think of a bomb or, a nuclear... attack.
Yeah, totally. I guess it's kind of these cogs of clockworkness in it as well as that kind of bomb idea getting in there as well. Then you start to look into it and start thinking the Meccano almost feels almost like circuit-like. So it's kind of a mix of this like very organic character that's like flowing and rounded and then these very strange angular bits on the inside.
And actually they give it a sort of robotic quality. I sort of think quite a few of his things look like they could be robots.
Yeah, that's why the character ended up inside a robot in my thing.
Yeah. But I do think, I mean, I think it's dramatic and it's unsettling as much as it is funny. Some people are going to look at this and just say, I don't get it.
Yeah.
I don't like it. What's your defence? Why is this worth looking at?
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
That's really difficult, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, I can only say how I enjoy it. I know that if that was like at the bottom of the stairs when I got up in the morning, walked down the stairs, I'd look at it and I'd probably laugh every single day. And I just, it just gives me so much enjoyment. But I guess if you were in a really bad, upset mood, it would have the entirely opposite effect, wouldn't it? Of sort of this misery and it's, well, this character's going to die.
Yeah. There is. I mean, I find it incredibly emotive.
I have friends that would actually pick off the Meccano, probably.
They would. Mm. They would. I mean, I'm amazed it's, yeah, somebody has resisted the urge to play with the Meccano. But I think what it does is doing what a lot of modern art is doing at this time, isn't it? It's trying to challenge the norm. It's trying to be unlike other arts.
It just does. As much as it being serious in its themes, it doesn't take itself, it's not trying to take itself so seriously. I think there's a lot of artists that do take themselves seriously. I mean, it's great, some of the stuff they do, the messages they send, but I often feel like, come on, chill out. That's meant to be fun as well, as being some kind of expression. He's like,
I was reading about Barge, actually. I was reading that he worked on a weird pseudo-philosophy where they used to make up imaginary scientific scenarios. So it was him and Echo, I think, as well. But they would write these treatises that were entirely imaginative, entirely imagined, and yet using the language of science and philosophy to make it seem really, really sensible. And that absurd nature of just nonsense, writing very, very serious nonsense. There's that. I think he's got an inherent conflict between that idea.
There's a kind of worry there that if we all get blown up tomorrow, maybe his theses of stuff will survive and people read them and think that's how it was back then.
Yeah. They sound absolutely fascinating, really, really funny. But I think this is, we haven't actually dated the painting, have we? So it's 1963 to 1964 ish. As I say, it's got Meccano, it's got paint, it's got elements of collage going on in there as well. But when we think about it coming out of the 60s, I think that's important too, isn't it? Because you mentioned obviously the Cold War was going to be playing heavily on his imagination and the obsession with the nuclear. But in a way, I do see this sitting quite comfortably within the 60s as a sort of art, a time in art. It's bright, it's subversive.
There's a lot of other works of his during the 60s that probably tie in a lot more with the free love thing that's happening then. But yeah, it does. It has got a vibe to it, hasn't it?
Go on. Tell the listeners about them, because
right,
they are funny.
Okay. I always wonder how much I can say in my particular work and everything. But
you're not on children's TV now.
Great. So he's drawn, he's painted and made some great prints and works, which all have a lot of dicks in them. Yeah. Okay. and they are as striking and as incredible as Fire, but you look at it and think, oh my days, that's what's happening there. And yeah, so I guess there was some 60s vibes coming through in 60s those
60s vibes coming through in the free love. But it's funny, again, kind of being serious now, but thinking again about this childlike quality, the idea that they want to sort of draw and paint like children. We were saying earlier, didn't we, that there is a point in a boy's life where they will just start drawing
penises
everywhere.
Bus stop willies everywhere.
Scratch them into the side of the car.
No, they say there's a point in boys' lives. You never grow out of it, I don't think, afterwards. No. It's still funny, like, later on.
Yes, yeah, yeah, I've heard the outtakes from Art Ninja stories.
The phallic
already.
Obsessions, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, right. Yeah.
But that, I mean, this is a bit more serious, I think. Mm. This is, and again, I think what's interesting, going back to that idea of making up this sort of absurd philosophy, that you can have these emotions in the same image is what I think makes it so powerful.
Yeah, that's why it is such a success, isn't it?
Mm. It's the humour, the ridiculousness of it. I mean, that face looks ridiculous with the eyes made of Meccano, and yet simultaneously the horror, the fear, the noise, the drama that's coming out of this.
It's really clever because it's so simple. I mean, just the complementary colours makes it obviously make you look at it from across the room and attract you straight into its face. And yeah, it's very simply done, but it says so much.
It really does. And the more you look at it, actually, the more successful I think it becomes. Mm. So
it's rubbish at drawing hands. But...
Yeah, they're very, very bad fingers. Mm. I think my 5-year-old could definitely do better than that. Mm. Well, I'm really interested by the fact that he's chosen this quite this floreate design in the background, all these leaves, because in a way it sort of sets it outside.
But yeah,
there's
it's like a jungle, isn't it?
Yeah, there's something quite, I suppose, quite primitive about it as well. Because again, when we think about the 60s, this idea of kind of different influences coming in to the art world, but I just think it's a wonderful contrast between those sort of muted greens and beiges of the leaves, and then that really, really bright primary colours.
Mm. Mm. It does feel wild, doesn't it? Like it's a wild creature. And I guess that's maybe what I used to think when I felt like it was a radicalised expression that had come to life as a character. I think I did feel, because of this greenery around it, it was like a wild animal in a just going out of the woods suddenly.
Yeah, and the bared teeth as well. Yeah. I mean, we haven't even talked about that. That open mouth with the again, he's brilliant at using contrasts, isn't he? Mm. So contrasting red and green, complementary colours, and then the white and the black there is just so stark. To me, there is a definite sense of an animal, something like not entirely human. And the fact it's green, of course, you know, again, not entirely human.
No.
some sort of imagined creature. There's the wild animal element here, but I think there's also, I mean, it's almost a slightly extraterrestrial, slightly alien-like. It is something that a kid would imagine. Maybe, you know, coming at them in the night. There's like a bogeyman.
What's the word? It's anamorphic. My vocabulary sometimes drops from me. Where you are basically putting...
Anthropomorphized.
Yes, exactly. Thank
you. There you go. Ask the medievalist.
There we are. Yeah. It is, because we then put the emotions into this little creature, what's going on in it. Like the beholder fills it with its own meaning, which is why so many people can interpret it in different ways. But right, you were saying earlier about that. We've got the complementary colours obviously make it pop out of you, just a very, very dark contrast. If you look at it in the way it's put together, like just in the thirds and where everything's like that, he's using very, very, very simple artistic techniques just really effectively. Do you know what I mean? He hasn't overworked and tried to be a set. He's kept it really, really simple, as you said, like in the childlike way. But all those things working together just makes it really, really pop.
I think that's brilliant, because again, there's a reason that this works, whereas other randomly thrown together childlike drawings may not. And that's because he understands the principles of how to compose an image. And you're absolutely right. You know, this idea of segmenting the diagonals that are coming through all over, these are classical devices.
Yeah, I almost feel like I've been hoodwinked by a pop song. I like it because it's made to be liked. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
you've been caught in the trap.
Yeah, so again, this is coming into a sort of pop art time. There is a definite sort of pop. Yeah, I just think it's a really accessible image. But just because it's so simple and accessible doesn't mean there's a lot of there isn't complicated ideas informing it and making it work. It does work. It's successful, and it is emotive. It is making me feel emotions, and they vary depending on your mood. Like you say, the viewer almost brings the meaning to the image. They bring their own narrative.
If you had to hang this in your house, what room would you have it in?
I like the idea of it being at the bottom of the stairs.
Yeah?
Yeah, I like the idea
to welcome
that
or scare away
scare
guests.
Me in the night. Yeah. Yeah, scare away guests, but also just surprise me. There's a certain sort of boo quality to it as well, isn't it, with the hands in the air. I think it's brilliant. And I think actually he is an underrated and... not particularly well-known artist, but he deserves to be well-known.
It's... I find this picture works as clickbait for all of his other work.
Uh-huh.
So if you see this and you enjoy it, you should then go and check out everything else because it will really cheer up your day. Mm. You know, you just start going through something and you anthropomorphize all these pictures. God, I can't speak. And you just love every single one of them. Or suddenly you come across one that you just wouldn't expect him to do, and that makes him so much more fascinating.
Mm. So, yeah, because he's so diverse, isn't he? And yeah, I mean, I think that's the other thing as well. When great artists who are skilled, who are trained, I mean, he trained extensively. He cut his teeth, and he could do his draftsmanship. Bit like Picasso, isn't it?
I wonder if that's why he's not so well known, because Picasso kind of the era was...
dominant.
Yeah.
And you can see elements of them doing similar things.
Yeah, he's done quite a few works that does... I mean, if you saw one of Barge's works, you might assume it was a Picasso just because of the composition, the way all the facial features are knocked about.
Mm. And I think that they've gone through the same process, haven't they? Which is, despite the fact that they're incredibly highly skilled, highly trained artists, they reject those traditions. They throw out all the grandmasters. He used to replicate them, didn't he? He used to do Leonardo's. He used to copy them out and then mess around with them, collage them. And so there's that 1960s sense of pulling the grandmasters off their pedestals and creating art that's there to provoke, that's there to you know, some people can hate it.
Mm.
It's okay to hate it. That's the other thing. I always think it's quite good to hate artwork.
I think so as well, because if you've got a piece of, if you don't make a piece of work that people hate, how can you genuinely make a piece of work that people are going to love?
Right, you know? Right. Yeah, you have to have something to counter it against. Yeah. And a lot of modern art is Marmite. A lot of people will not like this who are listening to the podcast. But I think that's a really important aspect, because hate is an emotion too.
Yeah.
And if you stand in front of it and you're feeling angry about it and wondering, this isn't art, how can you call this art? If you're having that process, then you're engaging with it.
If anyone can put into words why they hate this, I would love to know why.
Oh gosh, thanks. Yeah. I'm going to be getting loads of vitriol now.
I really enjoy that.
you're going to mess up my feed now, Ricky.
I think it's because you posted that picture of my phone on Twitter.
You're trying to get me back. Yeah. You're trying to ruin me. I think it is important. I say it to my students as well. I say, I don't mind if you tell me that you hate Tracy Emin's bed. I don't mind if you tell me that you hate Damien Hirst's shark. You know, it's good to have a conversation about it and work out why you're having those feelings towards it, because that's partly what the artist wants you to do.
Mm.
You know, if he wanted us to all like this, he could have painted a beautiful, perfect landscape. He could have reproduced another Leonardo.
Yeah.
He's provoking. He's trying to do something to get a reaction.
Are you getting frustration from it as well? Even though it's such an explosion of stuff, I feel like it's trying to break away from
it's getting
something
under my skin. Mm. Definitely. It makes me feel edgy.
I'm gonna dream of this little face now. Every time I look back, it's still there.
Well, surely after animating it, you must have been staring at it for
I was aware staring
days.
For quite a long time.
We've talked loads. This has been brilliant. Thank you for bringing me and the Art Detective listeners to this work. I think it was a really, really good choice. I'm not, as I said earlier, I'm not in the least bit surprised you picked it. And it's the big kid in you that
I'm
made
so
you
predictable. I should have picked one of the ones with dicks in, right?
I'm amazed you didn't turn up wearing your Art Ninja top as well.
What are you talking about? I am wearing it. It's a great thing about podcasts. You can't see
me.
We
don't know. Ricky, it's been amazing. You're brilliant. I love Art Ninja because I think you're getting kids interested in art. And actually, you don't become... not people don't really tend to just fall in love with art as an adult. You have to start young and you have to get kids interested, and that's the future of the discipline. So
I hope so. Thank you
for
having me.
You're on Twitter, aren't you?
I am,
yeah. Want to follow you.
I am at Rex Martin.
At
R-E-X M-A-R-T-I-N.
At Rex Martin.
Funny enough, Ricky Martin was taken.
I wonder who got that one. Living la vida loca. I'm also on Twitter. I'm Dr. Yanina Ramirez. You can subscribe to the podcast by going to historyhit.com/artdetective. It's been a light-hearted, fun, exciting podcast today. And next week, more is to come. Thanks so much, Ricky.
No, thank you very much.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row, Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.